The Life Boy Show. Starring Life Boy's own Bob Burns. With tales of those kinfolk in Van Buren. Bob's special guest for tonight, Walt Disney. And that famous band that plays for fun, Spike Jones and his City Slickers. And here he is for Life Boy, America's great storyteller, philosopher, and traveler, exponent of good old common sense, Bob Burns.
Who is that, Harry?
Shh, quiet. It's Bob Burns of the Life Boy Show. Listen.
Well, I certainly am much obliged. You don't know how good you make me feel. If I'd known you was going to act like that, I'd have come out here 30 minutes ago. You know, and it's so nice to be back on the radio again after being off all summer. And I want to thank all you people listening in at your radios tonight. I want to thank you for being there to kind of welcome me back. And I especially want to thank all the people in the studio that came all the way down here to the show tonight. I want to tell you people, you are wonderful. Neither cold nor heat, rain, hail, snow, sleet, or fog can keep you away as long as it don't cost you nothing. I want to tell you that that trip I took this summer, that done me a world of good. I got out in the sun a whole lot, and I just wish all you people listening in could see this beautiful tan I got. Why, honestly, my face is so tan, it makes my eyes look so azure. And honestly, it makes my eyes look like they got more lustry. My wife was telling me, I just throw that in there. My wife told me that with this tan face, she told me my eyes look like two sapphires on toast. Now, I didn't have to go down to Arkansas this summer to visit my kinfolk because it just happens all my kinfolks are out here visiting me. And all Uncle Slug and Grandpa and Grandma Snazzy and Uncle Fudd, all of them are out there. And I was so glad I had them the other night because two burglars broke in my place. And you should have heard my kinfolks holler. They hollered and yelled so much that they scared the burglars out. And I want to tell you, I think my kin folks had a right to holler. They was there first. My kin folks, I have so much fun out there with them, and they come in so handy to help me entertain the soldiers and sailors that come out. You know, they boys, sometimes I have them out for dinner, and they stay for the evening, And the other night, now my kinfolks helped me entertain them. The other night, we had a flyer there, just come back from the South Pacific. And so he was telling us about the worst experience he ever had. He said he was down there in the Solomons, and he said he was flying along up there 25,000 feet when he saw the enemy plane below him. And so he nosed over, and he dived straight down. And he says he come down so fast that when he come out of the dive, he blacked out. And my Uncle Slug was there. That's my drinking uncle. He says, brother, I know just how you felt. He says, night before last, I blacked out coming out of a dive down on Main Street. Well, sir, I'm so glad I got back when I did. I got back just in time, too. I don't know whether you heard about it or not, but I want to tell you this. Folks, I had a little bundle at our house last week. Boy, was I glad to get that laundry back. Well, now, of course, you know that Barbara, all my kids are grown up now, and little Barbara just started to school this year. And we were all so excited. Don't kids grow up when they start to school for the first time? And where in the world do they pick up those things that they do? The other night, Barbara's only 5 1/2 years old. Of course, we told them she's sick to get her in, but the other night, we were sitting at home there, and I was reading the paper, and my wife and I had been discussing some of the Hollywood social life, and little Barbara spoke up, and she says, Daddy, when a man's married, is his wife his better half? And I said, yes, Barbara, that's what they say. And so she sat there and studied over that a long time. Finally, she says, well, Daddy, when a man's been married two or three times, there ain't much left to him, is there? I'm telling you, the kids are so smart now, this generation, this young one. The other night, I was talking to her, and I wanted to check up on her and see what kind of book she'd been reading and check her memory. And so I was talking about Robinson Crusoe. And so I got to telling her about Robinson Crusoe being lost on this desert island where no human being had ever been. And I was talking about how lonesome he was. And finally, after he'd been there a long time, one morning he got up and he was walking across the island. And I said, Robinson Crusoe saw some strange tracks in the sand. I said, now whose tracks were those? And Barbara said, Mrs. Roosevelt. Now, of course, that's enough about me. Now, all of you know Spike Jones, the City Slickers. Well, you know those boys have been off on a long tour this summer, touring the nation. And that boy sure packed them into the concert hall. Spike, I want to welcome you and the City Slickers.
Thanks, Bob, and thank you, music lovers.
Yeah. Spike, I understand that one of the numbers you introduced on this show last season was a big sensation on your personal appearance tour and a real hit in your current picture. Thank your lucky stars.
Well, that wouldn't be Hotch of Cornea, would it?
Boy, you are getting close. Go right ahead and play it, Lindley.
It was for listening, not dancing. Now you'll have to go take a life boy bath.
Oh, Chessie.
Boy, what that Spike Jones don't do at a number ain't worth doing, huh?
Well, say, Bob, I've been waiting for a chance to get you off to one side and find out about things back in Van Buren.
Oh, Vern, everything's under control there except for old man Sludge. You know, when Grandmammy Sludge asked him to take a bath last week, he said he'd taken a bath during the regular spring cleaning. That was enough for any man during one year. He sure did.
Well, maybe that's all right for him, Bob, but not for the rest of us. Everyone, except Old Man Sludge, enjoys popularity, but you can't be popular if you offend.
What that guy says, Lifebuoy's not a bad soap.
Well, for once, you're right, Harry.
I guess most of us have heard that old saying, emergencies make men. And it's the truth. Now, you take this present emergency. It's uncovered the hidden talents of a lot of men. Mark Clark, Ike Eisenhower, Doug MacArthur. And there's another fellow who ain't a general like them others, but his work is mighty important to the nation. When it used to take many months to teach a civilian how to be a soldier, on account of this guy and the pictures he makes, the time has been cut way down. Besides that, he's given us such lovable playmates as Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck. I want you to meet my friend Walt Disney. Well, now, it's mighty neighborly of you to drop in, Walt. And, hey, tell me, how'd a fella like you ever get mixed up in making war pictures? I thought your racket was making animals talk.
Well, it didn't take much effort, Bob. They called me to Washington and said, will you? I said, I will. They said, go ahead. So I went ahead.
You sure did. Well, I've heard about those Army and Navy pictures you've made, Walt. You know, I'd like to see some of them.
I guess you'll never see them, Bob. They're made especially for the men in the service. You were in the last war, understand?
Yeah, I was. I tried to get in this one. I went down to my old outfit, the Marines, and tried to get back in, but they said, we're having trouble enough with Hitler. Why encourage him? But, Walt, you know, one war picture I did see, that was victory through our air power. And it sure converted me.
Well, that's swell, Bob. We believe that if air power is understood and used properly, the Allies can win this war sooner and save millions of lives.
No question about it. Didn't you make a picture all about the weather? Or maybe I shouldn't mention that weather.
Well, that was aerology. We took clouds, thunderstorms, fog, ice, rain, sleet, took it all apart and showed what makes them tick. It's used by the Air Forces.
So a flyer can learn what he's going to bump into before he bumps into it,
yeah,
huh?
Exactly.
Well, it only goes to prove what I said, Walt. Your pictures are doing a lot for the boys in uniform. But now, Walt, there's one thing that kind of worries me. With all your government work now, you ain't neglecting Mickey and Donald and Pluto and all the rest, are you?
Definitely not. They're working just as hard as ever and making almost as many pictures as ever.
Well, that sure sounds good to me. I'm glad we ain't going to lose Mickey in the game because, well, I declare I don't know what I'd do without them little animals.
You like animals, don't you, Bob?
Oh, I sure do, Walt. It's kind of a weakness with me. I come from a family of animal lovers, you know. I got one aunt, that's my Aunt Boo. Aunt Boo, she's so fond of animals and things that whenever she sees a worm out by itself, she cuts it in two so it won't get lonesome.
Well, you certainly do come from a soft-hearted family, Bob. Mm. And that reminds me, I'll have to cut this visit short and duck home to see my family before I leave for Mexico tomorrow night.
You're flying down, of course.
You bet. When I'm in a hurry, I fly. They say there's not a spot in the world more than 60 hours from your own airport.
You know, that's almost unbelievable.
Well, the airplane is rapidly shrinking the world.
My goodness alive, what a difference it is now and when I was a boy. I remember back there when the furthest any of my folks had ever been away from home was down to the creek to soak a wagon wheel. One day, I remember, though, a traveling salesman come through there and he took my Uncle Fudd to Van Buren for the first time. That is 20 miles away. When Uncle Fudd got back that night, all of us gathered around him and Grandpa says, well, now, Fudd, now that you've seen the world, what do you think of it? Uncle Fudd says, well, sir, if it's as far back that way as it is up that way, she sure is a whopper.
Well, Bob, the motion picture will help your Uncle Fudd and everybody else to keep up with this changing world because it shows them culture and customs and problems of all the other nations, which will make the world a big classroom.
Walt, that's a mighty important assignment. I'm not going to keep you from it any longer. I want to thank you and say good luck to you in Mexico. So long, Walt.
Well, thanks, Bob. And as our friends below the border would say, hasta la vista, mis amigos.
Okay, folks, you've all heard that famous Spike Jones recording of Der Fuhrer's face. Well, like Schickelgruber, all phonograph records are two-faced. So here's the other side of that City Slickers sensation on shellac with a vocal by Del Porter, I Want to Go Back to West Virginia.
Say, that's a good number for me to play on my bazooka. Spike, you mind if I let you on the last 16 bars? Go ahead.
I want to go back to West Virginia. I want to go back to the one I love, where the skies are blue and the birds sing too. Take me back to West Virginia. They took me away from West Virginia. They took me away from my home, sweet home, where the friends I knew were so kind and true. Take me back to West Virginia, where the fields are filled with clover and the mountains reach the sky, where the flowers bloom all over till they make you wanna cry. I wanna go back to West Virginia. I wanna go back to the one I love. When the world is free, that's a place for me. Take me back to West Virginia.
It's always fun to listen to Spike Jones and to Bob Burns, but like everything you enjoy, it's twice as much fun to share your enjoyment with someone else. And that's why everybody likes to have friends. But folks who aren't fresh and attractive generally find they're not very popular. And that's a shame, because it's so unnecessary. Anyone might offend without even knowing.
Coming back from playing army camp this summer, I stopped over at a little town called Porter Junction. Before the war, it was one of them towns that the train had to back into because it always missed the first time. Corky Connor, a kid I grew up with down in Van Buren, had settled down there in that town and hung out his doctor shingle. I hadn't seen Corky in, 15 years. Now, if I'd have known what I was getting into, I'd have stayed in that comfort of that reserve section in the baggage car on a streamliner. But big trust in me, I hiked down Main Street and on up to the door of Doc Connor's office. That reception room was just plumb full of folks waiting for the doctor and talking to each other about the trouble.
Little Tommy, I think it's his stomach. I told the foreman at the Porter Works I don't like to take time off, but when a child's sick, it's a mother's duty to see he gets the
doctor's
attention.
As I walked over to the nurse, I heard a man talk.
Yeah, the thumb and first two fingers. My own fault, I guess. You know, I used to sell menswear. Trying to keep up with a punch press is a new racket for me.
Oh, excuse me, ma'am.
Yes?
My name's Burns, Bob Burns. I'm an old friend of Corky. Dr. Connor.
Oh.
I thought maybe I'd pay him a little visit, but with so many sick folks sitting around here, I guess I better phone him in the morning.
Oh, no, please, Mr. Burns. Doctor's been working so hard, and if you're an old friend, I have an idea. It's just what he needs now.
Yeah, well,
Just this way, please, through this private door here. A doctor?
Yes, yes.
An old friend of yours, doctor.
What? Well, I'll be...
Why, Corky Connor, I declare I'd know those ears in a thousand.
And I'd know that Van Buren drawl in a million. Doc Burns, gosh, it's good to see you.
Doc Burns, my goodness alive. Nobody's called me Doc since that day you slid into third base and broke your leg and I bandaged up, remember?
And it was a good job, too. Only you made just one little mistake. You bandaged the wrong leg. Have a chair.
Oh, thanks, Doc. I'll only be a minute. I know you're...
And good. Remember when you grew up, you were going to be a doctor?
Yeah, yeah, and you as a kid always putting on shows in the barn. You was going to be an actor.
Turned out the other way around, didn't it, Robin?
Oh, don't pay no attention to them Hollywood columns, Corky. My being an actor, just publicity. But say, all them sick folks out there in your lobby, you think you was the only doctor in Porter's Junction?
Well, under normal conditions, I could handle it, Bob. But these aren't normal times. Like so many other towns, we've turned into an arsenal overnight.
Yeah, well, it did seem I passed nothing but Porter's plants coming in on the train.
Yeah, Porter's the leading citizen, leading industrialist, leading everything around this town. He converted a dozen small plants that his bank owned into one big factory.
And that factory's sort of the whole town, huh, Corky?
It is, Doc. I mean, Robin. But the employees are folks who never did that kind of work before. White-collar workers, youngsters, wives, mothers.
Well, I'd say that's mighty fine.
Well, of course it is. But they're new to the industry, and they get excited on their jobs and careless. Their kids are left alone too much, and... Well, it keeps me hopping morning, noon, and night. You see, if I just had a little...
Sorry to interrupt, but Mrs. Porter's on the phone again. It's her appendix this time.
Oh, that woman.
I told her your office is full of patients,
but she insists I come right out.
Yeah.
She'll drive me out of my mind and the medical profession. Why, she's got the constitution of a commando. Tell her to try an ice pack.
Yes, Doctor.
I'm sorry I blew up, Doc.
Oh, it's all right.
Robin, I mean. But that Porter woman brings out the Mr. Hyde in me.
Mrs. Leading Citizen, huh?
Mrs. Hypochondriac. She cultivates aches and pains the way other people cultivate victory gardens.
Oh, Doctor. Doctor.
Here, what is this?
I gave Mrs. Porter your instructions, and I heard a gasp, and it sounded like she fell down.
Fell down?
Yes, Doctor. And now her phone doesn't answer.
Say, I hate to believe it, but maybe this time she really is ill. Come along, Robin.
Well, sure, but
we'll slip out the back way here. A nurse, tell the patients I've gone out on an emergency. This Porter mansion is someplace, isn't it, Doc?
Yeah, but now, look, you keep calling me Doc like that, and somebody's going to believe it.
Yeah, wait, somebody's coming.
Oh, come in, Dr. Connor. Mrs. Porter's in the living, in the music room there, practicing the conga.
What?
Right in there. You can go in.
Oh, thanks. Come along, Doc. Of all the cases I've ever had, this is the worst.
One, two, three. Oh! No, it's not. One, two, three. Ooh.
Good day, Mrs. Porter.
Oh, why, it's Dr. Connor. And you brought a friend with you. How nice.
Mrs. Porter, I'm just a country doctor, but I'd like you to kindly explain to me how a woman dying of appendicitis can get up and throw her hips out of joint practicing the conga or whatever that was.
Oh, but my appendicitis. You can't know how distressed I was. Positively faint. But you know, Doctor, the moment after I called you, I felt so much better. You see, I had a dinner party for 20 last night, and I know I shouldn't have, but that delicious roast beef just seemed to say, do take a second helping, and I did.
You serve roast beef 20 people?
Well, I know just what you're thinking. And if you promise to keep a secret, I'll give you this meat man's phone number. He only charges a little more than the law says he should. He says if it wasn't for those people in Washington, we'd have plenty of meat.
Well, now, Ms. Porter, one of the real reasons for the meat shortage is because we got too few hogs on one side of the counter and too many on the other.
I don't feel so well myself. Let's go, Doc.
Well, sure, but...
So you're a doctor, too. How delightful.
Yeah, but, lady, I'm...
I know Dr. Connor won't think me unethical to tell you about my awful headaches. You see, what is your name?
Burns, but you see...
Oh, Dr. Burns, this awful feeling, it goes right over my head, down to my shoulder, and all the way to my ankles. What can it be?
From your description, lady, it sounds like a nightgown.
Easy, Robin.
You don't understand, Doctor. I've gone all to pieces.
I don't see any laying around, Miss Porter.
Well, I'm sure it's overwork. Yes, overwork, that's what it is.
What kind of work you been doing, Miss Porter?
Why, war work. I'm on the phone constantly telling the other women what to do. Why, I don't know what they do without me.
But, Miss Porter, just listening to you,
You know, I can tell you, you're in bad shape.
What?
You know, we got to rush you to the office right away.
Oh, heavens, what is it? What do I have, doctor?
Ms. Porter, you've got a whispering heart.
Oh, no, a whispering heart.
Yeah, it's been whispering and you ain't been listening. Now, we're going to have to give you a treatment like you've never seen before. Come on, let's go.
Sit right here in the outer office a minute, Miss Porter. Say, Corky, you better get back to the other patient.
Okay, you old rascal.
Now, Miss Porter, give me your hand. I'm going to take your pulse.
Goodness, there are so many sick people waiting here to see Dr. Connor.
Yeah, and I told Porter a thing or two today.
Shh, Dr. Burns, that man's talking about my husband.
I told Porter if the factory had its own playground for our kids, my boy had never got into
Johnny's
that trouble.
Johnny's a sergeant now. He said cable him if it's a boy or girl. And he's so proud that I'm making parachutes. But I'll have to quit when the baby comes.
Cold lunches every noon. No time for shopping. And I get home at 7 p.m. and George gets home at 10. I tell you, it's pretty hard.
I guess all these people are employed at the Porter Works.
Yeah, and from the way they're talking, Mr. Porter's about to lose some of his employees. That means machines idle, production slowed down, and lives lost on the battlefield. If only somebody would figure out a way to make things easier for them workers at the plant.
Oh, somebody certainly should. It's a shame.
You know, Ms. Porter, a body with some executive ability could organize things and have a nursery in the factory to look out for the kiddies while the parents work, and a playground, maybe a dining room where the employees could get hot meals at cost. Maybe even a little hospital set up to cut down the cases that keep Doc Connor sitting up nights. Wouldn't take much money if it is organized, right?
Oh, we have the money. I mean...
Well, what do you say?
Oh, I know I should. I should have done it months ago. It's just that I, I can't say.
Oh, go ahead, Miss Porter. What is it?
Well, it's just that nobody like you has ever come along to inspire me.
Uh-oh.
But I'll do it, Doctor. I'm going to do everything you suggest. Build a nursery, a playground, a hospital, and the man in charge must be you, Dr. Burns.
Holy smoke.
Doctor, you're as white as a sheet.
See, I got to get out of here.
Why, Doctor, where are you going?
Well, I'm leaving on the 6:40 train. I can just hear the Berkshires calling.
Oh, the Berkshire Mountain?
No, ma'am, my Berkshire Hall. Out here in Hollywood, they used to have parades and brass band whenever they opened a butcher shop. I went to one of them butcher shop openings one time. You know, the people applauded so much, two hams got up and took a bow. Why, it's the truth. And the really big news out here now, though, is the new half-hour radio show that starts tomorrow night, starring Amos and Andy. Yes, sir, they'll have all their old pals and a lot of new ones, and big-name orchestra and famous guest stars. Well, just don't miss Amos and Andy tomorrow night.
And be sure to be with Bob Burns again next week. Same time, same station. Enjoy yourself with Lifebuoy. Lifebuoy is the only soap especially made to stop...
beyond.
Well, what did you think of the show, Tess?
I liked it, Harry, but does it make you want to buy a cake of Lifebuoy?
Well, like the fellow says, we all want to be popular. And how do you expect the boys to whistle at you, Tessie, lest you bathe with Lifebuoy?
Expect the boys to whistle at me? Well, I never. Harry, aren't you the one?
Good night, folks. See you next week. Good night, Harry. Good night, Tessie.
L-I-P-T-O-N for tea, L-I-P-T-O-N for me, Lipton tea, Lipton tea, Lipton tea.